JB grabbed at his fedora to hold it clamped firmly on his head as the splintery wood floor of the wag whacked him hard in the tailbone and bounced him a good 4 inches in the air. The wag was jolting along at a good 50 clicks an hour, or not so good, on a road that wasn't much more than a couple tire tracks in the hard pan, already starting to deepen and widen into arroyos from the erosive force of infrequent but fierce rains. Way too fast for the suspension, one way or another. Almost all the chosen from the wag caravan had been herded together in the Cold Heart Stakebed wag, including three of the captive companions. Doc was squeezed between the captain and his driver, riding in the cab of the lead wag, which was second in line behind a Baja buggy scout with its own rollbar-mounted machine gun. It couldn't have been too comfortable for him, all crammed up against that unyielding body armor, even leaving aside the company, JB reckoned. At the outset, the pair of guards keeping watch on the prisoners in the bigger wag had ordered them to keep their heads bowed and their fingers interlaced behind their necks. That hadn't lasted. Even when they were free to grab onto what handholds the wag offered, and one another when it didn't, it was all the prisoners could do to keep from getting tossed in a big snake-mating ball of butts and elbows. Their captors, while cold-hearted enough, were more than just cold hearts, it was painfully apparent. They were sec men, probably calling themselves soldiers from the way they dressed in odds and ends of uniforms and gave one another salutes and titles, military fashion. And if there was one thing sec men hated, it was disorder. It made their jobs harder. So the order about clasping hands went by the dusty way. The captives rode mostly in shocked silence. Overhead, the glorious blue that had so fatally intoxicated them was being blotted as clouds came racing in, lead gray. The armorer saw Mildred looking up at them. To her, their speed was unnatural and still alarming for all the time she'd spent unfrozen and in the present day. To the others, it was the fact that the sky had been almost clear that was disconcerting. The late His Honor's bodyguards, Amos and Bub, had left women behind, bleeding out in the dust. Lanky, raw-boned Amos had two kids, a boy and a girl, who now had flies crawling on their eyeballs. He was blubbering about it with his huge slab of ham hands covering his face. At least, JB reckoned he was mourning his woman and children. It stood to reason not even a would-be sec man would be wasting tears on the once-and-never mayor of New Tulsa. Stacked right next to JB, Bub, the burlier and smarter half of the team, was glaring at the companions with little pig eyes.
That bastard Curtis was right about one thing. You nuke suckers weren't shit when it came to being guards.
Say what?
Calm down, Jack. You got one thing right, friend. We aren't shit.
Don't crack wise with me, you sawed-off little...
The first two fingers of JB's right hand lashed out and snapped the backs of the tips against Bub's blonde stubbled jowl as quick as a diamondback strike. They did no damage, but stung. Bub shook his head once and blinked, totally off balance. JB brought his left hand whipping around in a hooking palm heel strike. It mashed Bub's already generally shapeless nose across his face. The blow slammed the back of the goon's skull into one of the heavy uprights rising from the periphery of the truck bed. Bub clutched his face as blood trickled between his fingers and down his spine. It began to diffuse in thin red spiderweb nets through the sweat coating his thick neck.
Hey! Stop that! I'm warning you!
A young guard raised his M16. JB smiled and held up his hands, palms forward, to show that he was unarmed and innocent of ill intent. The other guard, older and obviously case-hardened, just rolled his eyes and gave the armorer a tough look.
Man's got a point.
Mildred sat across from JB with her knees up and her arms around them.
Some defenders we turned out to be.
No talking!
JB ignored the guard. The raiders had obviously run this drill before. As if to emphasize the fact, the older guard was toting a 12-gauge Browning A5 auto-loading shotgun sawed off to the gas check, a pretty serious crowd control implement. If the prisoners got seriously frisky, and particularly if they showed signs of trying to make a break for it, the guards were ready, willing, and able to commence some serious blasting. But it was also obvious the raiders needed bodies, and they needed lots of them. Warm, fully functional, and not leaking from extra orifices. So the captives enjoyed a certain amount of leeway.
We just got caught flat, Millie. The wind, the sun, bright blue sky. We got loose and careless. Now here we are.
Be quiet! I told you I'll shoot! I will!
Cody! Knock off that shit before I lay this mare's leg up alongside your empty damn head, won't you?
Who gives a rat's red ass if the bastards talk?
Cody sank into sullen silence. The older man held on to the upright at the front right corner of the bed with his left hand. The other held his sawed off across his drawn-up knees. He stared back at the captives from a face as hard and flat as a cast-iron pan. Mildred's eyes caught JB's. He tried to give her a reassuring smile, but he realized it just looked like somebody was turning a nut at the back of his head and tightening the skin around his mouth. He knew he couldn't piss down her leg and tell her it was raining, but she and he were paired, and he felt he owed it to at least try to do what he could to keep her spirits up. He thought of Ryan and had to look away. He took off his glasses and polished them with a handkerchief he removed very gingerly from his pocket. After a few moments, he put the specs back on and faced the black woman again. Mildred was still gazing at him with curious fixity. Once she had his eyes back, she let her own run meaningfully down toward his scuffed boots. He nodded, slow and slight, a motion that would be lost to anybody not studying him a lot more closely than anybody but Mildred Wyeth seemed to be in the general jouncing and jostling induced by the truck banging along across the desert. The frisking he and the others had gotten had been professional, but cursory. The Sekhmen were looking for weapons. It didn't occur to them that JB might have a full lockpick kit concealed on his person, much less a couple of odds and ends, including more picks and maybe a weapon or two. And never in 1,000 years would they suspect what might be hidden in, say, a hollowed-out boot heel.
Don't see we got much choice but to take the cards as we're dealt them and play them as they lay. With Ryan dead...
Ryan not dead.
Whatever, Jack.
Feel here, in gut, if was.
Don't talk nonsense, Jack.
Jack's eyes lit up in anger.
Listen!
Take it easy, you two! We gotta stick together right now.
The traveler sitting to Mildred's right cocked his head.
What about that bitch of Carter's?
Mildred's elbow jabbed hard into the traveler's ribs.
Ooh!
Ah, sorry, Seymour. You just take it easy now. And remember, it's not good to speak ill of the dead.
Seymour glared at her and rubbed his side. He said no more, though. A woman toward the front of the wagon had gotten agitated.
So that's just it? We just let them shoot down our friends and loved ones and scarf us up as slaves? And that's it? End of story?
You got a better idea, Maisie?
The woman gazed wildly around at her fellow captives.
They got the drop on us. That's all there is to it. Spilled blood can't go back in the body.
The woman at Maisie's side took her arm and whispered urgently in her ear. The hard-bitten guard tipped up his scattergun until its foreshortened muzzle pointed at the now overcast skies. He didn't say anything, didn't even change expression, but the implication was clear. There would be no more conversation out of the captives, not because of any silly rules, but because they were getting themselves all stirred up, talking. If they got too stirred up, it would make more work for him. That wouldn't happen. And even though the shot column didn't spread out any too quick, even from a barrel that short, the odds were pretty good that whoever the Coldheart picked as designated troublemaker wouldn't be the only one to cop some .33 caliber double-aught balls.
Ryan not dead.